I wanted to really go through the Shulchan Aruch. I chose your, the Or Chaim would be very, very, very long. The laws of Hagolas Kelim are found in two places. They're found in Or Chaim and Hilchos Pesach, Simonim Tafnun Aleph and Tafnun Beis. Tafnun Aleph is about which Kelim you can kasher and what do they require for kashering, washing, Hagolah or Libun. And Simon Tafnun Beis is actually a little bit more how you do the practical kashering. I may talk about, if we have time at the end, I'll mention some of those dinim, and some of them are captured here anyway. But if you look at Siv Gimel in Simon Kuchav Aleph, there are two simonim. At the end of, after dealing with Basar B'Chalav and Taruvos and Macholei Akum, and we've done touched upon really all of those things in the last 6.5 years. And then a couple of the random simanim, then the Shulchan Aruch closes this section before moving on to something we also spent a lot of time on, which is Yayin Nesach. It closes it with three simanim. Simon Kuf Chaf deals with the laws of Tvilas Kelim, and Simanim Kuf Chaf Aleph and Kuf Chaf Beis deal with the laws of Hagolas Kelim. In Sif Gimel, the Mechaber writes, Dinei Hagolah V'Libon Halohim K'suvim B'Hilchos Pesach. So he's telling you, I've written them all there. So he doesn't go through all the mechanics. And here he deals with some specific things. And I would like to take the chance to talk about and some discuss some of these things. Sif Aleph, the Mechaber begins, Halokeach Kelim Yishanim Min HaOvdei Kochavim. If you buy used Kelim, literally old Kelim, but it means used Kelim from a non-Jew, in the same manner that the non-Jew used them, in terms of the level of heat and the manner in which it absorbed any of its absorptions, that is how you amashur it as well. If you buy all used kelim, which were used cold, or typically used cold, Kigon kosos utzlochios v'chayotze bahen, cups and a tzloches. I had a discussion with my students about this. I think tzloches is a pitcher, and something similar. Madichon, you rinse them off. Itzarach l'shafshafim heite b'mayim b'shas hadacha. You have to scrub them well when you're washing them. Kidei l'hasir ulamareka iser shagabem, to remove any iser that is be'en. After that, you rinse them off in water, and then you put them in the mikvah. Now, one of the issues that is, in effect, dealt with here, but not as explicitly, and we mentioned this once, and Tosus discusses this briefly, is if you have to, when you buy a used kli from a non-Jew, you have to both kasher it in some way, whatever the kashering entails, and you also have to immerse it in the mikvah. And the question is, does the order matter? So, preferably speaking, we prefer that you kasher it first. There is a group of Rishonim. It would appear that Me'ikar HaDin, we don't really paskin this way, but there is a group of Rishonim who say that if a kli was toveled before you kashered it, the tefila is no good because it's like a tovel v'sheretz biyada. It's an interesting way of putting it. Now, the truth is, the logic is not compelling in its own right. The reason why Tovel, someone who goes to immerses in the mikvah but is holding a dead gecko while they're immersed in the mikvah, or a dead mouse, so the reason why the mikvah doesn't work is because they're constantly in contact with the tumah, that which the mikvah is trying to remove. But the tevila on kelim is fundamentally different. It has nothing to do with the kashrus per se of the kelim, with the iser, it has to do with the ownership. Now, I imagine those Rishonim who say that you must, that doing the tvila afterwards, first, is no good, would argue that it's all part of the same. No. I'm going to talk about the second here. Only here is that relevant. It's not relevant by the hot stuff. But would probably argue that it's really all part of the same process. In other words, the idea of Tevilas Kelim that the Ran quotes from the Yerushalmi, the Ran on the Rif at the end of Avodah Zarah, says that it's Ola Mitum Asam Shel Goyim L'Kdush Asam Shel Yisrael. Right now, it's funny, the expression is Mitum Asam Shel Goyim, but that doesn't mean Tum of Atar. In fact, generally speaking, Goyim are not Mitame. But Mitum Asam Shel L'Kdush Asam Shel Yisrael. And I've suggested in the past, I'm sure this has been said, that this is really tied to the idea. The Gemara, I think Gemara Chulin says, somewhere the Gemara says that Yecheskel shown a vision in Mizbeach, And he says, "Zeh haShulchan asher lefnei Hashem." So the Gemara says, "What do you mean? It's not a shulchan. It's a mizbeach." So the Gemara says that when the bizman shebeis hamikdash kayim, the mizbeach is mechaper. But when there is no beis hamikdash, shel shulchan or shel adam is mechaper. One's table is mechaper. So there are probably two ways. One is that you feed aniyim on your table. That's one way. But the other aspect, the way you treat kachim, is that you eat food b'kedusha. There were all sorts of practices of. If you want to see, there's a concept that I think the Gemara ultimately rejects, but there were many pious Jews in the Second Temple period and maybe even post-Second Temple period that they observed this practice, was called Chulin Shinasu al Taras HaKodesh. That even though they were eating Chulin, they weren't eating Truma and they weren't eating Kachim, they would treat it as, with the Chumros, with the stringencies, as if they were eating Kachim. There was this idea that even though it's not Kachim or Truma and the Torah doesn't mandate you be Tahar, there seems to be this idea of wanting to approach one's eating B'Tahara. It's a certain kind of, I would say, literally purity, but I would say a certain kind of sanctity. So if that's just simply part of a whole process of how we approach eating food, so kashrus is very much part of that equation as well. In other words, the idea that the food has to be kosher, but that it also has to be eaten in it with a certain kind of preparation and a certain kind of sanctity, and non-Jews don't eat, that's not the way they approach their food. So then the tefillah of Klamidyan, as we call it, the tefillah to be olami tumasan shal Yisrael, l'tosan shal goyim, l'kdushasan shal Yisrael, and the hechsher of getting rid of the tarfus, whatever it is, however you get rid of it, are actually perhaps more connected. Right? In a very classic Brisker sense, we would say there are two different kinds of tefillah. But in terms of an overarching spiritual sense, there really is a much more intrinsic or fundamental connection between the two. So anyway, that's a machlokas harishonim. Now, what Sam did say, which is correct, is that the one case that everybody would probably agree that doing the tefillah first might be ma'akev is if you're dealing with kelim that were used for kol, and you didn't clean them off properly, because then the foodstuffs that are on the inside, that's only all you're trying to do when you're cleaning cups, is if there's a little chazir, piece of chazir dried on there, but if you don't clean that before you do tefillah, now you have a chatzitza between the kli and the water, and that's going to be a problem. So the Shulchan Aruch says that you have to first clean them out thoroughly, and then you do tefillah. Okay. Now, one of the interesting issues that comes up, and it comes up, it's discussed in the Achronim here, with regards to this question of tefillah or hechsher first, ironically, is that there are those who want to argue that if you have a kli which needs hagala or libun, but it's clean, that, of course, tefillah has to work before you, even if you didn't do Hagan Libun, because you're allowed, we'll talk about what the parameters are, but if you have kelim that need kashering, you're allowed, at least bederach arai, in a non-permanent fashion, you're allowed to use them for cold. And if that's the case, in order to use them for cold, you don't require any Hagala or Libun, but you do require tefillah. So it's kind of hard to say that you do tefillah so you can use them cold, but now that you do libun and hagala, you have to do tefillah again? That would seem very strange. So there's a whole discussion in the Shach here about, if you bought a kli, depending on what you wanted to do with it and why you did the tefillah, how that would play into this machlokas. I was always under the impression, reading Hilchos Tevilas Kelim, that me'ikar hadin, even if you do the tefillah first, it's good. But l'chatchila, one is supposed to do the tefillah after one has done whatever the requisite hechsher is for that particular kli. Okay, let's go to Sif Beis. Lokach mehem kelim shenishtamesh bahen bechamin. So if you buy something that they use with hot liquid, with a liquid medium, bein shehem shel matechas o shel eitz o even, mag'ilon v'achar kach matbilam. So you do hagala, and then you do tefillah. Imhem shel matechas, if they're metal. Now, the reason why the Mechaber doesn't mention glass is because, according to the Mechaber, glass is not bolea. And therefore, you wouldn't require any hechsher for glass, other than if it's for cold, if there's stuff actually be'en on it. But you never need to do hagala or libun on glass, according to the Mechaber. That isn't mentioned, discussed here. It's discussed in Hilchos Pesach. And Mechaber just says that glass is not bolea, it doesn't require anything. And the Ramah quotes a chumra that he's machmir. I probably mentioned before, there is a supposed stira between that Ramah, who says that you can't even kasher glass for Pesach, and a Ramah in Hilchos Siyai Nesach, I think it is. It's more an argument from silence, and the Ramah seems to assume that glass is not boleo. At least that's the way they read it. And there are different kinds of resolutions to the problem. The one that many follow is that it's a Chumra Pesach. Lagabe Pesach, we say that glass is balea and cannot be kashered. And Lagabe, all other things, we say that glass is not balea at all, so it doesn't need to be kashered. But the Mechaber certainly is clear. Svardim, Ashkenazim don't do this. Even if you adopt that approach, we don't use glass for hot things for both fleishiks and milchiks. But Svardim might. Svardim might use glass dishes, you know, without even thinking twice for both milchiks and fleishiks if they've been cleaned in between. So the Mechaber says that if they're metal, they require tefillah. Otherwise, obviously, it just requires the hagala. Mutarim. If you did hagala after the tefillah before the hagala, it's mutar ve'yishomer shetzarach lachser hulat bilan. Now, those who disagree, these are the two opinions that I mentioned before. Gabe.
According to the Ramah, why would it be that you couldn't?
Why you couldn't? Because it's like cheres. The Gemara in Shabbos, firstly, it's briyasan min hachol. It's made from sand, which is, I know, is a little different than clay. So the reason we assume that it's not bolea is precisely because it's so smooth and it's not absorbent. But the Gemara has, when it comes to the dinim of Tumah v'Tahara, so the last perek in Maseches Kelim, yeah, get all the way to perek Lamed, unless you read the Kati's introduction, to know that the Rabbanon would go there on clay zechuchis, on glass kelim, that they are tameh mid the Rabbanon. But there also seems to be a day in the Gemara, maybe in Machlokas, that you can't be mitire them if they become tameh. And the Gemara talks about in different cases, sometimes we treat glass like metal because just like metal, if it's broken, you can melt it down and reshape it. The same thing with glass. On the other hand, because tchilas b'riyasam and achol, because it's made from the same material as earthenware is made, so you treat it like cheres. So it seems to occupy kind of in this in-between status. That should, of course, all be irrelevant when it comes to hechsher kelim. Hechsher kelim should be dependent only upon one factor, which is the absorbency, which is why the Mechaber compares glass neither to earthenware nor to metal, right? Earthenware can't be koshered. Metal has to be koshered. Glass does not need to be koshered. But that's probably, I'm pretty sure that's where the Chumrah and that the Ramah is quoting, whoever's saying it, thinks that maybe it can't be koshered because it's bolea, because it's made from earth. Okay. And then the Ramah writes...
Eitz and Evan are mentioned also. Well, how is that? What's then?
Eitz and Evan require heksher. And boiling water. If you use that,
Evan is from the ground.
No, but it's not. It doesn't. It's not like sand or dirt.
And eights. You said that eights. You can.
Eights can be koshered. Eights absorbs. Eights emits. If you have a spoon that's, let's say, treif or milchik, a wooden spoon, the same way it became treifed up is the same way that you kosher it. I will add one detail here that I'm actually now unsure about, which I never occurred to me before. We'll talk about it a little bit, or talk about the issue when it gets to Sif Dalet. I always assumed that when we talk about absorbing through a liquid medium, it means that if the treif stuff, or if what you're dealing with is a liquid, is bishul, then it only requires hagala. If there's no liquid, if it's dry, it requires libun. This doesn't usually come up anyway, but I'm getting the impression that there's an opinion that it's a tshuva the Ramami Panu, Rav Menachem Azariah Panu, who was a 16th century Achron, roughly contemporaneous with the Shulchan Aruch, who assumes that no, it's not just whether liquid versus solid. He says that the reason why liquid only requires hagala is because when you cook and a pot with liquid, something treif, the liquid isn't treif. The liquid absorbs flavor from the food that's treif, and then it goes from the liquid into the pot, and because there's an intermediary for the absorption, therefore less is absorbed, then hagala is enough to get it all out. Whereas if the liquid itself were a treif liquid, I don't know if you were concentrating balsamic vinegar from Yayin Nesach, right? Or it was chelev that was liquid in the pot, so there, it sounds like he holds that that's actually requires libun by definition. We'll talk about it. It's best. He comes up in a tshuva about a frying pan, which we'll talk about in siftala, which is complicated in its own right. And the reason why solid, when it's dry, it requires libun is because the iser is touching directly. But the only time liquid reduces something to the requirement of hagala is when the liquid itself is not treif, it's just absorbed from the treif. And the same thing would be then hold true by chametz. In other words, if you could come up with a liquid, truly a liquid that were chametz, I'm not sure what that would be. I guess if you consider that, if you were to cook that in a pot, you should require libon on them. I don't know anybody would do that, but you would require libon on such a pot. It would only be, let's pretend for the moment pasta is really chametz. So when you cook pasta in a pot, the pasta flavors the water, and then the water goes into the pot. So that's where hagalah would be required. In most cases that we deal with, it's not going to make a difference because it's usually the liquid itself is not going to be the treif thing. It's going to be the thing that absorbed from the treif thing. So it's just going to amount to the same thing. But the case the Ramami Panu is dealing with is if you have, let's say, chelev, you have non-kosher fat from an animal that's being used to fry stuff. And so even though it's liquidy, he would say that requires liban because it absorbs the issu directly, not through a liquid medium. So I always thought, and I'm probably wrong, or maybe it's a machlokas, I always thought that it really, the issue is how much is bolea depends upon whether, I would say the following, when you bake something directly, so a solid on the pot gets caked on much more. More gets absorbed and things like that. Whereas when it's a liquid, it doesn't, you know, that's when you burn stuff in a pot. You burn stuff in a pot when liquid's gone, and that's the stuff that's really hard to get off. So I always assume it had to do with that, not with, per se, the flavor, how much flavor is in the thing that's actually the conduit into the pot. Okay. Again, there aren't so many cases that it makes a nafgamina, but the one I just gave you about the treif oil, bona fide treif, and it's not an oil. Again, most non-kosher oil today that you would buy, if it were truly non-kosher, it's not because the oil isn't kosher. It's vegetable oil of one kind or another. It's because it was made on equipment that had, lard or tallow or something like that. So it's exactly, again, something that was bolea iser. That's not the problem. But if it were actually, the lard or the tallow or whatever it is, of non-kosher animal in the pot, so that itself would already require automatically libon. Okay, and if you came up with if you came up with a chametz case that was used with a liquid, but somehow the liquid, you boiled scotch in your pot, okay, if scotch, again, I'm not going to get to the question of what's its status, let's assume it's bona fide chametz, so then it should require libon. I assume people don't usually boil scotch in a pot, but, I'm not sure what other liquids would come. By the way, I don't think that's true, Sam. Wait, is there any water? Is there any water that scotch is made with?
Sure.
Well, in other words, if it requires water that the wheat or whatever the scotch is made from is soaking in, that again, Sam, is already something that's absorbed the flavor. It's not. No, it's going back to our discussion earlier. It's water, which is also to consume, and it might be chametz, you might get kares, but when it transfers flavor into the pot, okay, so the water's the medium. Yeah.
So if it's more than 50%.
Well, no, because still water is the conduit. Even if the water, is, let's say, less than the alcohol, I think, right? I don't know. Maybe. Okay, maybe the scotch would be the case. So, okay. So anyway.
So are we saying then that frying is equivalent to bishul?
We'll talk. Let's wait till we get the siftal, and then we'll talk about it, which will be momentarily. Because, let's finish this Ramah. Din klei etzem ayin behilchos pesach simin taf nun aleph. What is the status of bone, real bone china? Can I call it that? I don't know why. What is bone china? Why is it called bone china? Does it have some bone ground up mixed in or something like that? I don't know. But this is real bone kalim. Okay? And so he says, look in Hilchos Pesach, there I say, we paskin klei etzem, I think, are like klei eitz. They absorb and they can be koshered. Yes,
I have a context question about bone.
If it's related to Hagalash Kalim.
Why is it considered not treif? From a dead animal.
Okay. Firstly, it doesn't have to be. It can be from an animal, shecht, and animal. Number two, bones even of a non-kosher animal, if they're pure bones with no gelatin in them, there's no flavor in that kosher.
Does the desiccation of meat become not
food? That's off the topic. I won't go there. So, okay. The English damesh b'mei hagala. So there's a chumra not to use the mei hagala. Now, why not to use the mehagala? After all, we only do hagalas kelim on something that is not a benyomo, as the Ramah is about to say. The minog is to be machmer, and I'll explain this in a moment. And we've talked about this. But if you're only doing hagala on a kli that's not a benyomo, or the shishan and the mayim, why can't you drink the mehagala? The answer is, it's a chumrah. right? In other words, we would say that if it's certainly, if you kashered a kli, which was eino ben yomo, but you didn't have shishim, so you rely upon the fact that all the tam is no same tam of gam in the first place. So under those circumstances, we would say that drinking the water might be considered like cooking in the pot lachatchila. Just that, in other words, it's a little bit of a misnomer. No sein tam lefgam is mutter. It's not mutter b'diyeved. It's mutter. What we say is that a pot that absorbed food when it was good and now has become pogum, lechatchila, you're not allowed to cook in that pot because you might come to cook in the pot before 24 hours have elapsed. But we wouldn't say, it's not that the no sein tam lefgam is only mutter b'diyeved, it's the usage of the pot that's only mutter b'diyeved. But here we're saying, in effect, that if the water was used to kasher the pot, and now the water is considered having a tam pogum, somehow that's no sein tam lefgam lechatchila, and somehow that's also. That's what this chumra is. Okay. And then the Ramah says, oh, I skipped the one line. Ein lahagil shum kli kol zman shu ben yomo. You're not allowed to kasher any kli when it's a ben yomo. Why is this the case? So when we explored in Tosfos, the concern when you want to kasher a kli that is a ben yomo, you need to have shishim in the mayim. You need 60 times in the water connected to the volume of the walls of the pot, the item you're kashering, because it might be complete isser. Like, it might be, the entire thing could be balomia, so we don't know how much. And therefore, you need 60 times that. And we're afraid that people, some pots, it's going to be hard to get shishim. We're afraid people are going to make a mistake, and therefore, to keep matters simple, if you wait till after 24 hours before koshering an item, you don't have to worry about any tam. Now, there's one exception to this rule, which al pidin, you don't have to worry about at all, and yet the Ramah is machmir not to do. And that is if you want to kosher meat kelim, or you want to kosher milk kelim. The reason why this is not a problem, al pidin, is because think about what might happen. I have a vessel, a fork, a knife, a small bowl, a cup or something that I put into my big pot of water, and I don't have shishim, even if I don't have shishim keneged the volume of the clay. But what was in that clay that I'm koshering? It had milk in it. Milk is not treif. So when the milk comes out into the water, at that point, what is the status of the water? Is the water milchak? And the answer is no. Why not? Because it's not barnat. When it comes to things that are heter, a secondary flavor of milk or meat, the way the Mechaber paskins and the Ramah paskins b'dieved, a secondary flavor of milk or meat is not considered milk or meat. So therefore, if I have a pot that is a benyomo, fleshik pot benyomo that's clean, and I cook broccoli in it, according to the Svardim, I can pour cheese sauce over that broccoli now. Not in the pot, but on the plate. According to the Ramah, if I put the broccoli on a plate and I went ahead and I wasn't supposed to, but I poured the cheese sauce over it, I'm allowed to eat it. So even according to the Ramah, b'dieved, not two nesinas tams are enough to be mutter. So here, the milk flavor the pot flavors the water. Is the water kosher right now? The answer is yes. At worst, it's milchak. But since it's kosher, and it's only a secondary tam of milk, it's not even milchak. So therefore, it's not a problem if I kosher a kli, which is either bisari or chalavi, one or the other, not mixed to both, not basar b'chalav, but bisari or chalavi, if I kosher them, even if the kli is a ben yomo, it's not going to flavor the water in a way that the water is going to be considered milchik and the water will reflavor my item or make the outer pot be a problem and so on. So really, al pidin, one should be allowed to kosher milchiks or fleshikli, even though it's a ben yomo, because the concern doesn't apply. But the minog that the Ramah quotes, the practice of not koshering a kli ben yomo, applies to everything.
So soy milk that's been processed on dairy equipment, soy milk.
Right.
It says usually, half KD.
But so Sfardim would pour that over their meat. An Ashkenazim lechatchila wouldn't pour that over the meat. But if an Ashkenazi poured it over his meat, if he ground up his ground beef and Oreos, disgusting, but okay, he did that, it's kosher, even according to Ashkenazim. Okay?
So if I had a meat pot that I used today, I could use that pot, in theory, to kosher some dairy thing that I used today also.
No, that's complicated. That look in Simon Sadi Hay in your idea. That could be a problem because the milk and the meat could meet in the water at once before they disappear.
I was saying the water doesn't become meat from the pot,
and the milk is good. Yeah, maybe. Take a look in Simon Tadihei. That's one complicated case. If you did it, you would be correct probably if you said, if you had a pot, a power pot with water in it, and you kashered a meat kli, and now you took it out, and then you kashered a milk kli, it shouldn't be a problem. But if you do them at the same time, that could be it. It's not my, take a look. I think it's inside the head. Okay. And then the Rama says, Komakum shetzarach hagala, lo mahaniim klofo, or kolfo l'chola kli, if you require Hagala, and let's say instead of doing Hagala, you literally scraped away a layer of the clay, the Rama says that's not sufficient. Okay, we're going to talk about what scraping next week, 2 weeks, when we make the Siyam, we'll talk very briefly about sharpening a knife, about how you kasher knives, and it comes up in the last sugya, and it's a question of what is the purpose, what is the Mishnah. We learn the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, what does the Mishnah say? It says, Hasakin Shafa Vihi Tahora. Right? So Shafa, the way Rashi in these reads initially, there are two Lashonas of Rashi in the Gemara. But Shafa means to sharpen it. You sharpen the knife, then it's not a problem. The simple reading of the Mishnah is that just as Libun works to kasher a grate, even though it requires heat, sharpening a knife accomplishes the same thing for a knife, even though there's no heat of the magnitude of Libun. I mean, if you sharpen a knife, it probably does get pretty hot. But not Yad Soledis. Well, I don't know if Yad Soledis, but it certainly doesn't get to the heat of Libun. That's for sure. Okay. Fine. Now, the Ayin L. By the way, the last line in Ramos Simon Kuf Ches de Mirada Shel Iser. That's a very interesting thing that you hope we don't encounter today anymore. There was a situation where you had communal ovens, and as is very clear, amply clear, from the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, and the Rama, what would happen in these communal ovens is sometimes the goyim would bake non-kosher stuff, and the problem we're dealing with here is the merada, the thing that the imagine it's kind of like, like you scrape the pizza or the bread out with. I don't know what you call that thing, and if Shuman. Treif Shuman spilled on that because the guy was cooking something. So you're not allowed to use that merada within 24 hours, even though it's been cleaned because of the blios. After 24 hours, you're allowed to have the guy use it for you with your food because he's not going to listen to you to make another one every time Shuman spills on it. So that the Mechaber and the Rama permit, even though it's in effect using a kli, an Eino Ben Yomo kli, it's an Eino Ben Yomo kli, in order to take the Jew's stuff out of the oven. What, of course, neither the Mechaber and the Rama utter bu about is the fact that the same oven that was used with the goy's tray food with the shamlunis that could spill on the merada, as the Jew is then having his stuff baked in the oven as well. The reason I presume they don't say anything is because, as I've said before, I know Ramosha was Machmir, but the Pashtus in the Shulchan Aruch, as my Rebbe says, there was never a question if an oven was used for something that was Nevela and then later was used for something with Shchuta. The only question of Reicha Milsa was when they were baked or roasted in the oven at the same time. Yeah. So when it's used B'zeach or Zeh, it's not even a question. Okay. All right. So Sif Gimel, we ready. Dine Hagala V'libun, Haloim K'suvim B'chos Pesach. Sif Dalet. Machava Shemitagnim Ba, Afal pishin l'inyan chametz b'pesach daylo b'hagala l'inyan sha'ar isurim tzricha libun. So the Mechaber says the following, which is actually a very difficult psak. The Mechaber says that a frying pan, even though with respect to Pesach, does not require libun, only requires hagala. With respect to all other isurim, it requires libun. Now, the simple reading, the way the Taz reads, one interpretation of the Shach, and is that the reason why a frying pan by Pesach does not require Liban, only requires Hagala, is because Chametz is Heter Ebala. Chametz before Pesach is considered Heter, and as we learned last week, I think it was in the Gemara and Daf Ayin Ham at Aleph, that when it comes to a pot that absorbed kachim when the kachim was heter, and then only later it's in the walls of the pot when the clock passes, strikes midnight or daybreak, and now becomes nosar. So the Gemara said it is sufficient to use Hagala on that spit or that grate or whatever else the kachum was cooked on, even though, had it been Isser, had it been a grate or a spit that was used with treif meat, you would require libun, but because it was hetera bala, it only requires Hagala, no matter what, no matter how directly it absorbed. So the way they want to explain the Mechaber is that, and I think it may be the Mechaber is based on the Tshuva of the Marami Pano, I don't know if that's possible or not. Want to explain the Mechaber is the Mechaber says that Chametz before Pesach has Hetera Bala, and therefore no matter how it absorbs, it only requires Hagala. So there is a problem, as opposed to Litni and Shari Surin, but when you're talking about real treif stuff, it requires Libun. The difficulty with this interpretation of the Mechaber is that the Mechaber paskins in Orach Chaim clearly that Chometz before Pesach is Isur Abala. I mentioned this previously. There's a major machlokas Rishonim about this issue. Is the status of Chometz before Pesach, when it gets absorbed, is that Heter Abala or Isur Abala? So some Rishonim say, yeah, Heter Abala. And that's why stuff for Pesach should never require Libun. If you can clean it properly, Libun is never required. Why? Because it's always Heter Abala. But since the Mechaber in Simen Tov Nun Aleph and Orach Chaim, Hilchos Pesach, quotes the dinim of many things that require Libun with respect to Pesach, clearly he's paskin like those Rishonim who say, Chametz Kodem HaPesach is Isur Abala. And therefore, if it's the kind of thing where it absorbs directly, then it requires Libun. So there is another way of reading this Mechaber. Not that the reason why Chametz doesn't require Libun by a Machavas, not that it is Hetera Bala, but if you look, and the Shach points out, if you look in the Rama Mipanu's Tshuva, so he says that the reason why Chametz doesn't require Libun by a frying pan is because it's always absorbing. Let me just step back 1 second. There are those who understood that Rama Mipanu was saying that the reason why it requires someone that you asked before, a frying pan uses a liquid. Is that bishul or is that sli? So everybody understands that if there's oil when you're frying, that's called bishul. But they thought that the Rama Mipanu, that he was machmir, and the Mechaber is machmir because sometimes the stuff dries up and it absorbs directly. In other words, if the oil dries up, now you have a libun situation. And therefore, by the Goyi, when that happens, it's Isser being absorbed, and therefore you require Libun. By Chometz, B'Pesach, it's Heter Bala, and therefore you don't require it. Okay, now if that were the case, by the way, the Shach says, if that were true, and it's all about Heter Bala and Isser Bala, so then the Shach says that when you have a frying pan for milk or for meat, not Basar Chala, but one or the other, in order to kasher it, to make it par, you only require Hagala, because it's Hetera Bala. Even if your meat or your milk, the oil dried up, your cheese or your whatever it is, nonetheless, it doesn't matter because it's Hetera Bala. However, the Shach points out that if you look in the Rama Mipanu's Tshuva, so he says differently. He says, no, the reason why Chametz doesn't require it, whereas a Tarfus of a Goy does require it, is because what I mentioned earlier. The reason why Chametz, we assume there was liquid when you were frying of some kind. And the fact that the liquid might transfer flavor into the pot is not a problem to require Libun by Chametz because the liquid isn't Chametz. It's absorbing from the Chametz and putting it in the pot. But when the Goy uses his frying pan, he uses tallow, he uses lard, he uses something where the liquid itself is the treif thing. And therefore, that's why it requires Libun. Now, that point in the Shach may be indisputable. And it would be very nice because it would fit well, it would keep the Mechaber's position consistent. Chametz Kodem HaPesach is Isur Abala. And in theory, if it's the kind of transmission of flavor that would require Libun. Except that the liquid that you fry the chametz in the frying pan is not chametz. It's just the flavor transfer, and therefore a frying pan of chametz doesn't require Libun, only requires Hagala. Whereas when the goy fries, the liquid medium itself is treif, and that's or might be treif, and that's why it requires Libun. Now, the Shach then goes another step from here, and this Rabbi Akiva Eiger takes him to task for. And I honestly don't understand the Shach. The Shach then says, in which case, you by basar or by chalav, you would require libun by the frying pan. Assuming, let's say, the agency, assuming that this the thing that, let's say it was fat of kosher animal, which is fleishik, and you use that to fry in. Or let's say you use cheese, you know, or some type of, I guess, milk. Butter. Use butter, of course. Use butter to fry in. So since the thing itself is actually the milk, it's of the fleishik, so the Shach thinks, so then you would require libun. So, but here's what's difficult. Just because the mechat, if you look in the Tshuva Ramah Mipano, I think this is clear. He talks about basar b'chalav. He never talks about basar or chalav. So, granted that the mechaber is not saying chametz is hetera bala, but just because chametz isn't hetera bala, why isn't the milk or meat hetera bala? In other words, yeah, chametz we would say if chametz could sometimes require libun because it's isura bala even before Pesach it's treated as isser, and therefore if chametz is directly absorbed into the pot, then it requires libun. Hagala is not enough, but by basar or b'chalav it should be no different than kachim. And if it absorbs just basar or it absorbs just chalav, doesn't matter how it absorbs. It doesn't matter that you were frying in kosher fat or you were frying in butter. It doesn't matter because whatever it's hetera bala, hagala is always sufficient. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, he thinks he should be machmir like the Shach, but then he says Rabbi Akiva Eiger disagrees. I for the personally, do not understand the Shach position at all. Because I don't understand why, how you could disagree with what Rabbi Akiva Eiger says. So if you were asking me, I would say, we're already on Kasher Kalim until they're not B'nai Yomon anyway. So I think that if you have a situation of a frying pan or milk or meat, I don't think it's a problem to Kasher. Okay, but there are those who would probably be Machmir. Okay, that's probably the most interesting of these, of the question of frying pans. I once got the shy, I think probably almost everybody would probably agree in the following scenario. Someone got a frying pan, inherited one or something, was kosher, but they didn't know whether it was milchiks or fleishiks. So to me, it seems a davar pashut, that's a case where you can kosher it with hagola. The problem with frying pans and libon, of course, is that if they have Teflon coating, good luck on koshering it with a blowtorch. You might as well buy a new pot. So, okay.
We're not worried in terms of like Kabbalah Kach Palto that the oil is much hotter than water. So you're cooking at a much higher temperature than boiling water or whatever.
So the truth is, I don't know that, in other words, if you want to kosher oil may not boil off. Oil may be something you can heat to a higher temperature, but I would imagine when you have a pot on a stove with a maximum flame, the same pot, it doesn't get any hotter with oil or the water. Because there's only so, that kind of a fire on that kind of pot can only get it so hot. So it doesn't matter what you put in. I understand the reason why you would, one of the reasons, I guess, you would fry with oil, aside from that water wouldn't brown anything. I'm no chemistry expert here, but is that oil won't, if it evaporates, it would take a much higher temperature, but you're not actually getting anywhere near that temperature. Right? That temperature that you get the oil to would evaporate water, but it's not that you're getting oil to a hotter temperature than the water.
You are, though.
You're getting the oil to 300.
Or 400.
Yeah, 350 degrees, depending on which oil.
So it's smoking.
Yeah.
It starts to smoke, for example.
Except that I would imagine when you do heat water, you're also getting the metal to that temperature, but the water evaporates.
Right, but the maximum that the food would ever get to would be 212 degrees.
It's a good question.
And if that is the case, then you'd have to distinguish between different oils that...
Correct. I don't know. I've never been asked that. Nobody's ever pointed that out. I've never been sharp enough to realize that. So I have to... you have to stay on my case to get an answer to that question. I got to remember to see what they say. Right, I can't bring a raya from libun because, like, once you get a certain temperature of libun, it doesn't matter if it's hotter because libun destroys it from komo. But if the principle is kibolo kach polto, then maybe you should require, you know, something that would have a higher temperature than water to boil at. We get hotter, maybe you should require, that could have been a reason to acquire libun for a totally different reason, but they're not aware of that, obviously. They're not going to be aware of that, so I don't know, that's a good question. Okay. Fine. Then the Mechaber says in Sifhei, Im higil kli hatzarech libun, if you did hagala when libun's really required, osur l'shtamish bo b'chamen afilu shlo ayedei ha'esh. So the Mechaber here is telling you, you can't use it with hot stuff, and he's telling you something more. It's actually a subtle point. He's telling you that you might have said the following. You might assume that Hagolah on a pot that requires Libun gets out some stuff, but it doesn't get out everything. But you might have said that whatever Hagolah gets out is whatever would come out if I were just cooking liquid in it. And therefore, once I've done Hagolah, this kli should be kosher enough to use with other liquid, because it won't get any more out, because whatever came out with Hagolah. If I want to use it directly on the fire, then that rest of the stuff that the Hagolah couldn't get out, that got in because of Libun, you would have said, then I can't use it. But you would have thought that maybe if you did Hagolah on something that requires Libun, even though it didn't get everything out, it got out the stuff that would get out the next time, and you could use it. The Mechaber says, no. He says, even to use it, b'chamen afilu shalaya de'aish. Then the Rama says, you can lechatchila use it for cold stuff as long as it's properly cleaned. The kosher came by kli shetzar chagala that you can use with cold stuff. But bedavka b'derech arai, only haphazardly, meaning not a regular basis, kigon shu beves ov de kochavim o b'diyeved. B'diyeved probably means that you don't have any other kli to use right now and you can't kasher it. I think the Shach points out, I stripped out all the letters from the Bari line here because it's very hard to read if you leave all the letters to the Nosei Kelim. But the Shach comments there, it doesn't mean if you use the food, and of course the food is kosher, but it means that, let's say you have no other kli, then you can use that. Or if you go away, let's say you go away to a... One esteemed member of the Shir is currently in Utah, is absolutely delighted. I don't know why he was delighted. He kashered stuff. Why he thought that was such a big kunst that he could kasher stuff. Of course you can kasher stuff. I'm no names mentioned here. But let's say you had a mug, you know, an earthenware mug that, let's say you were afraid was used to absorb something. Somebody put soup in it or something like that. You can drink water out of that mug. It's not a problem if it's clean, because that's called bidevet. That's the kelim agai. And the truth is, you can't kosher it anyway. Let's say you could kosher, but you don't have the means to kosher it. So that's called bidevet. That's derech arai. If you want to have permanent long-term use, even for cold, it's a gzera, you might come to use it with hot stuff. So here the Rama has a chumra, which is really a machlokas himself and the Mechaber in Or Chaim. And we touched upon this once, and it comes up, I think, in the last big Tosfos on our Masechta, which I'm not going to read the entire thing, make the scene, but I'll talk about parts of that Tosfos. When you decide how to kasher a kli that's multi-use, which hechsher do you use? So we Ashkenazim will say that you use the maximum hechsher. In other words, if I have a kli that was used cold and hot with liquid, you do Hagala. If I have a kli that was used hot with liquid and directly in the fire, you do Libun. Even if the normal usage is the lesser one. The Mechaber writes, Paskins, that you follow Rov Tashmish Shel Kli. In other words, if a Kli is normally used one way, but occasionally it might have been used another way, the Mechaber says that you can follow Rov Tashmish. The way the Mishnah Berurah explains there, and there's a whole discussion in the Rishonim about this here, is that you only rely upon that when it's an Eino Ben Yomo Kli anyway. But here the Rama is telling you, no, we don't go follow Rov Tashmish of the Kli. If the Kli was ever used on a higher level, it required just once. Even if you're Choshesh, because that Kli is sometimes used that way, then Rama says you should do the higher form of Hechsher. So if you have a drinking glass that you know nobody ever puts hot stuff in because it can't handle hot stuff, the Rama would say that you just need to rinse that out. But if it's the kind of glass that it's plausible that they used for both, let's, you know, in your house, somebody might have put it in, you're not sure. Oh, in the Grace House, somebody might have, then you're supposed to do the higher form of Hechsher. Okay, and then he says, Afilu tevos v'shulchanos anikachem na'akum no'agim lahagil shema nishpecho aleim chamin. I don't fully understand this Rama. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, if it's the kind of table you really can't pour stuff on, it could damage the table, you don't have to do this. The Rama says that tables you eat on. Maybe the same thing would apply to a countertop. I'm not sure what the concern is in the following sense. Chametz b'Pesach, I theoretically understand. But year-round, I don't understand. And maybe they ate differently. Maybe they ate directly on their tables much more than we do. Maybe they put hot food on their table. We don't eat on our table. We eat on dishes. If something spills on the table, we might pick it up and eat it. But I'm not sure what the concern is, because whatever would have been absorbed in the table when you're using it is already no Saint Tam of Gam. So l'chatchila, to cook on that table, you know, to cook in a pot that's an Eino Ben Yomo, is prohibited. But nobody l'chatchila cooks on the table, or typically puts hot food on the table. We just don't eat that way anymore. Maybe it was different for them. They didn't use forks. They typically didn't use knives at the table, other than to cut things out of the communal plate. They did use spoons. So I'm not really sure. I'm not sure how much their table got used and they ate off of a lechatchila. But that's what the Ramah says. And the Or HaChaim, he says the way to kasher it is, when you talk about Pesach, is to pour just pour boiling water over it, because the most it would have gotten absorbed was if something hot spilled on it. So that's not kli rishon, but it's not kli sheni. It's iru mi kli rishon. So to kasher it, you do iru mi kli rishon. I think most of us, we don't kasher a table with Pesach. We just cover it with a tablecloth. Gabe.
So if you didn't kasher the table, and even if you had boiling hot food fall onto the table, you just
delete
it.
Except for maybe on Pesach, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because it's Eino Ben Yomo. And you're not doing it L'chatchila. It just happened. That's, you know, b'di'evet. Okay.
Anyway,
also,
mm-hmm. He said the gzera against using these tray dishes, even for cold food, is because you might come to ultimately use it to cook hot food.
Right.
Let's say it's not yours. Like, for example, I'm just thinking, like in school. Like, you go to a dining hall and you use a cereal bowl every single day, a tea bowl cereal. So there's no concern you're going to use that bowl.
I think that's called Derech Harai. I think it's Shogai. It's one of the examples that the Ramah quotes.
Even if it's every day.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I have to say that there's something bad that makes me uneasy, but I have no idea why. Just as I know that if I have a treif spoon, a lot treif spoon, but it's cold, I can eat my cereal with it. Somehow it just rubs me the wrong way, even though it's absolutely mutter. I don't know why, it just rubs me the wrong way. But I think it's mutter. It's mutter. It means if you bring something you want to bring into your kitchen, into your house, then it should be kosher. Okay. And then the Rambam says about the spilling, v'dafka l'chatchila, avo b'dieved ein loch shel chozeh, and I think the Shach points out, he's talking about the stuff he quotes, not the Mechaber. The Mechaber's din is not just l'chatchila, it's even b'dieved. If you did hagala and something requires libun, no good, even b'dieved. Okay. And then the Ramah says, "V'chli cheres shenishtamish bo betzoni me'achar di efshar ba'gala mikri di'evet esag labriko shtif heitei." You have an earthenware kli. Since even though it might have been used, it's normally used cold. It might have been used hot. Since you can't kosher it, it's called b'di'evet, and you just have to clean it. Okay. And he says you can even put sharp stuff in it afterwards. Okay. I don't want to go into that issue. That's in a whole other topic. Sivav, klematros, afopi shomrim, shem nishtamish bo iser b'miktsaso nesar kulo, mishum dacha miktsaso cham kulo, aval inyan hechshere, lo ololo hechshere achi yachshere kulo, bein inyan hagala, bein inyan libun. So this requires a little explanation as well. There is a machlokas. The way the Shach paskins here, the way we usually assume when you learn Hilchos Taruvos, supposing I have a pot of tray food in it, and I take a spoon and I stir. A long metal spoon, or some type of a metal thing, and I know I only submerge a certain part of the metal in it, not more. The question is, how much does the metal absorb? Do we say that it's only the parts that come in contact with the treifu? Or do we say, as Rabbeinu Peretz claimed, that since by metal, cham miktsaso cham kula, when one part gets hot, so does the other. Now that's true, that's hard to argue, that's conduction of heat. Therefore, he assumes that the blios also travel to the other parts of the vessel. Now, that is Rabbeinu Peretz's position. He's quoted as a Yesh Omrim, I think, in, I don't know, Simen Tzadi Ches or Simen Tzadi Tes in Hilchos Taruvos. The Shach assumes here, we don't assume that way. Okay? But if you held like Rabbeinu Peretz, you might come to the following conclusion. Now, there are two possible conclusions. One would be that, let's say, I cook the same way with that spoon and only part of it's immersed. So you say cham miktsaso cham kulo, and therefore it travels throughout the rest of it. But then you would perhaps say, when I want to kasher it, I only have to submerge that part as well, because cham miktsaso cham kulo, kibolo kach polto, and it will emit that way. And it could be that Rabbeinu Peretz and the Mechaber, working for Rabbeinu Peretz, would agree with that. But there's a second thing which clearly the Mechaber is prohibiting, which is the following. I would say this. Let's say I took my spoon and I stirred the tray food, but the entire spoon was submerged. But when it comes to kashering, you know what I want to do? I want to submerge only part of the spoon. I'll say, cham miktsaso, cham kulo, kibolo, kach polto. So that's what the Mechaber is saying. No. It doesn't work that way. Now, you could say the Mechaber, some, I think, understand the Mechaber is going further, that even for Rabbeinu Peretz, you can treif up the entire spoon that way, but you can only kasher it by submerging the entire thing. But the Shach thinks we don't paska like Rabbeinu Peretz, and therefore, the only part of a kli that requires Hechsher is the part of the kli that was immersed in the food that came in potentially came in contact with food. Now, in most cases, you don't really know, so you're going to have to do hagal on the entire thing anyway. But theoretically, only the part that was immersed. And if you know that only that part was immersed, it's not a problem. Okay, but that's why the Rama adds v'dafka im nishtamesh bekulav miyadua shel nishtamesh rapid mitzaso kibolo kach polto. In other words, I don't know how the Rama is reading the Mechaber, but we would accept the Rama's position fundamentally. If you know that only part of it, let's say, was immersible, could have been immersed, then that's the only part that you have to kasher. We don't really hold like Rabbeinu Peretz both for Isser, and we certainly don't hold like him for kashering of Kel. And we believe, of course, Cham Mitzaso Cham Kul, of course, metal conducts heat, but Blios don't travel that way. Blios only are absorbed into the part of the Kli that they come in contact with. Okay, and then one last din in the Shulchan Aruch. So for here, I'll spill a little bit of the beans. Okay, I'll talk about Bubba Mises and planting knives for a second. We're not going to take the Gemara's off the shelf. We'll read it 2 weeks from now. But the Mishnah had said that Sasakin Shafa Vihi Tahora, right? Which the way most Rishonim read, I think, is to sharpen. Rashi quotes that as one Lashon. And then the Gemara says, then the Gemara suggests that Sakin Noatza Bekarka Asara Pa'amim, a knife you stick in the ground 10 times. And I believe the Gemara says of a karka kasha, in hard ground. And then the Gemara says that's only lechal botzone. Only lechal botzone. So there's a big machlokas harishonim. What lechal botzone goes on? Does it go on sticking the knife in the ground? And sticking the knife in the ground allows you now to use that knife to cut cold stuff. Or does it go back even on the Mishnah? That's the way Rashi and Tosfos read. Even on the Mishnah, that in order to that if you sharpen the knife, it only permits you to use that knife with cold stuff. Other Rishonim, the Rambam says no. Sharpening is like doing libun. You're removing basically when you remove that edge of the knife, whatever blios were absorbed would have been absorbed in that outer edge, and that edge is gone. So whatever blios are there are no longer there. Okay, that's what the Gemara says there. Now, where does this Bubba Maisa plant, this is where the Bubba Maisa planting knives come from. The purpose of sticking a knife into ground is to clean the knife off. If stuff was caked on it, it's very hard to get off. So when you take really hard ground that was never worked, never avuda, and you stick the knife in and you pull it out, you stick it not in the same place, in another place where there's no loose dirt, that's how you clean the knife off really well. That was somehow nishtarvev too, when you get a knife that's straight, you stick it in a flower pot, which obviously doesn't work. Because number one, the soil in a flower pot is really soft. All it does is perhaps makes the knife more dirty. It's certainly not going to function to rip the stuff that's kurish on the knife off. And they only stick it in once. I don't remember the Tosfos talks about it, it's 10 times dafka. But the point of ni'itza bekarka is to clean the knife, and that then morphed into putting the knife in a flower pot. Putting a knife in a flower pot, it may make the flowers happy or not. It depends whether you touch the roots, cut the roots. It will make your knife dirty. It does not make your knife kosher. If that's what you're worried about, run your knife through the dishwasher, immerse it in, even hot water in the sink to clean whatever, all the gunk that's on it and get it off, and then you can use it betzone, but not for chamin. Gabe?
So can you just, if it looks clean, then can you use it betzone?
If you look at the knife, you feel it is not. Yes, it means if it looks clean, it is clean. Or to quote a famous comedian, in this case, we would say, although it's not true here, it's not how you feel, but how you look. That's what we say for the knife. Of course, if you feel stuff on the knife but can't see it, you practically clean it off. Yeah.
Let's add another vessel. So to use it for cold food, to use it for cold, also I just have to clean it off.
Yeah.
Why did the Gemara specify by a knife, you stick it in the ground 10 times. Like, they had ways of cleaning everything else without.
Because a knife is much harder to get clean. That was their assumption. Knives are the bane of our existence in Yeridea. Knives give me nightmares. Okay. I'm not quitting my day job, I promise. Okay. Finally, Siv Zayin. Okay. Sakin Yashan, Ben Gadol Ben Katan, Hanikach Me'ovet Kochavim, Imbalish Tamesh Bitzonein, So if you buy a knife, and the Mechaber here is sort of going through Shitas HaRishonim, because the basic problem Rishonim had to deal with was that is that the Gemara in Pesachim that we read last week says that knives require Hagala. Right? Rav Ashi said, I do make new knives. Say, so, what do you mean? But they said, yeah, but not everybody can afford that. He said, no, Kein Chadati, I make it like it's new. What is like it's new? I cover the wooden handle with mud. I do Libun on the blade, and then I do Hagal. I take the mud off, I do Hagal on the entire thing. And the Gemara says, Hilchasa Idiv Idibrotcha. No, we paskin, the knife only requires Hagala. But there's a Yushalmi, I believe, that says that a knife requires Libun. So the last big Tosus in our Masechta grapples, how do you resolve those two? And there are sort of two fundamentally obvious ways of resolving it. One is to say, Pesach is, Tosu says, Chametz is Heter Abala, and therefore a knife for Pesach, Sakini de Pischa is the Gemara's term that we read, Sakini de Pischa, by definition, only requires Hagala because it's Heter Abala. Alternatively, whereas the Yushalmi in Avodah Zarah is talking about Sakin Shel Isser, a Goy's knife, and that was Tarfus, and therefore it's Isur Abala, and if it was used directly on the fire, it requires Libun. The other way of trying to distinguish is to say it depends on how the knife is used. Is it a knife that's used on the fire or a knife that's not used on the fire? So I think one of the answers the Baalei Tosfos give initially is it depends whether the knife is big or small. Small knives are not used on the fire, presumably because you're more likely to burn your hand. Whereas a longer knife might be used to, you know, with the meat on the fire. So the Mechaber has this all in the background when he says the following: Sakin Yashan Ben Gadol Ben Katan Hanikach Be'ov De Kuchavim Im Balishdamish Betzonein Im Ein Bagumos. If it has no, it's not pitted. I don't know if he means it's serrated. I don't think it means serrated, but I think it means if you got like little pits in the knife where it's hard to get stuff out from there. Im Ein Bagumos, then Noatza Asar Parman Bekarka Kasha. You stick it into hard ground 10 times. Vitzarech Kol Neitza. Right, you can't stick it into the same spot. Even if you want to cut char foods. Now, the truth is, I don't understand the Mechaber's psak here, because I thought we assume, again, it's a big chumrah, it's a chumrah being mitzarif for a number of shitos, but we assume that a clean knife, that is eino benyomo, is still a problem with sharp foods. Right, a milchik knife that's not a benyomo that you chop an onion with, even though the knife is clean, will machmir to say that it makes the onion milk. So I don't know why the Mechaber thinks that this is okay, because this tikkun of the knife, of sticking in the ground, is only for tzonin purposes. All it does is clean the knife off. I didn't see any achronim comment here. I don't know why he said, unless I thought the Mechaber himself is machmir. It's in Simen Sadivav and Hilchas Basar B'Chalav where they talk about the knives. Okay, but if you're not, in other words, there are Rishonim who say that when the Gemara talks about a knife, it means because stuff that was on the outside of the knife, the shamnun is on the knife. So if you clean that off, then obviously it's not a problem. Okay, and then the Ramah, of course, says that that's only if you want to use it ad hoc, but not permanently, because as we said early, any treif kli that you want to use on a regular basis, you have to kasher. Vim yesh bo gumos, osherotza lachto pochamen o lishchot ba melabna o mashchiza ba mashcheza shal napachem heitev apane kula. You either do libun or you sharpen it across the entire knife. I don't know what he means. I normally can only sharpen the blade. I assume he means the entire length of the blade. You can't sharpen the sides. He says if you mashchiz that way, he's following the Rambam here. That the tikkun mentioned in the Mishnah of a sakin shafa vitor, if you sharpen the knife, is the same thing as libun mentioned in the Mishnah. All the things mentioned in our Mishnah are lahachshir it completely. So that's the Rambam's position, and that's what the Mechaber is quoting. That you can either do libun. If you can't clean it properly, or you want to use it for hot stuff, then it requires libun or hashchaza. And then the Rambam says, of course, because he's quoting his Ashkenazi forerunners, Rashi and Tosfos, V'yishom and Dashchaza Mahani, Rach Lachtoch Batzonin, Avalola in Yinchamin, V'hachi Nog Lachatchila. And then the Ramah continues, V'mlo Yuchal Alabein Hasakin Heitei Mishum Akata, Yilabinenu V'yagilin Achakach. If you can't do Libun on the knife well, because let's say as you get near the handle, you can't do that, then you should do whatever Libun you can, and then you do Hagala on the entire knife. Umihu Im Libno V'lo Higilo, if you did Libun, and you didn't do Hagala on this knife, afili yesh bo gumos, even if it has gumos, o im higilo v'lo libno v'ein bo gumos, or if you did Hagala, and you didn't do libun, but there are no gumos, so there's no be'en that's left in there, he says, lo nes v'chotech bo mat chacham, lo nes ha'afilu asakim in yoma. B'di evit it doesn't ask or anything. V'meshchizo b'mashcheses heite b'chomakom. If you sharpen it well everywhere, u'magilo acherkach, then you do hagala. Then mahani afilu l'chatchila k'mo libun im yochol l'nakos aguma shabel. It feels a little bit like, you know, alchemy here. You add a little piece of this hesher and a little piece of that hesher, and they combine together to make a l'chatchila. Okay. So again, there are more dinim. There's more about hagalas kelim, the actual process, the actual mechanics of how you do it practically, which probably the women know better than most of the men. You know, my sons might call me and ask me, how do you kosher the kli? No one ever taught me this. I did actually figure it out on my own, even when we got married, that when you kosher kli is you boil a pot of water and you put the other kli in it. But for some reason, when you get, especially young men, I don't know if you get the young women, you know, their first time in an apartment at the kosher something, that kosher, it's like, how do I do this? Like, you boil a pot of water and you toss it in. So there's some other details, whatever, we've seen a lot of them in Tosfos. You pour cold water on it afterwards. The Rama said, you're not magil a kli if it's a ben yomo. We always wait till in a ben yomo. But so there are more dinim and more details about which kind of can require which, but this is at least, I think, a pretty good introduction and a review of most of the dinim hagalas kelim and the ones especially that we've touched on in Avodah Zarah. Okay.